cannot present my own data or my own model, I'll just give, like Tom suggested, an overview or summary of blood coagulation after atherosclerotic disease and heart disease. And then maybe leave you with a few talking points, or maybe rather thinking points, so that if you have any interest to contribute to this field, you can do it. And from being here these 2 weeks and talking with you, I can already see several areas where you could contribute your theoretical knowledge and you know, the quantitative skill to this field. So just be very open-minded, because this is totally different from what you do. Okay, you are all probably familiar with the statistics, okay? And since the turn of the century, the death rate from cardiovascular disease in this country increased dramatically, and then in the mid-50s or so, because of very much more aggressive treatment by the cardiologist and surgeon, that rate appeared to be decreased, but the actual incidence of cardiovascular disease had not decreased. And in fact, in recent years, that
quick question. Sure. That's from like heart surgery, like bypass surgery, is that the main treatment?
There are now a variety of treatments. They can go depending of the.
I'm asking, is there a main treatment that was responsible for that decline?
No, it's in general. Factors. In general, the better hospital and the better education of the patients and the response to that. But the problem is that had leveled off, okay? And now, even under the best of circumstances, there's still a whole lot of people that die of cardiovascular disease, and much more than become incapacitated at relatively early age. And so that's the problem that we are dealing with, okay? And part of the improvement in the treatment, it depends on the improvement on the diagnosis, and this the computer-assisted tomography, and it helps you see where the lesions are. This is actually the heart of a 30-year-old man that had an atypical heart attack and died. And this, can you recognize the heart here? Or do you all know, this is the heart disease, you know. So you can see the coronary arteries. And so the autopsy material from this guy, you know, from those coronary arteries, will take a section. And this is what he had in his arteries. And don't get too scared, because we all have some of this, you know, this is and so the problem is that when you look at this, the lumen of the artery now is very much reduced. Here is where the blood is passing in red. The stain is for collagen, so there is a much more increased connective tissue in this artery. And this, you know, the whole thing of this is a few millimeters, okay? So now the blood had to flow through a much narrower channel. And in here, there is like a deposit of lipids, of fat, together with a response of the tissue to this accumulation of lipid. Like I say, these things accumulate through all your life, and you can see babies already have a little bit of a fat deposit. So there is not a direct correlation between the amount of fat deposit and the tendency of having a heart attack or a stroke, if it's in your brain. And this particular artery was not clotted, okay? So this is the underlying lesion, and the precipitating event is the formation of a clot, okay? And so we want to understand this reaction in the tissue before you have a clot, and then we want to control or prevent the formation of clot. And like I said, everybody has this type of lesion in more or lesser extent. And we want to understand the factors that make some people actually have more of a tendency to have heart attack and form this clot. And obviously, the flow because of this infiltration, as we call it. I'll say words that maybe you don't know what they mean, but just ask me, because it's very hard for me to translate into, you know, and then you'll see me hesitating, trying to find a word that will be easy for you to understand. And then this infiltration, that the white stuff is the lipid, but there is also cells that you cannot see in here, and there will be white blood cells, macrophages, okay? And this looks very much like a chronic inflammatory reaction, like you may have from tuberculosis or something, okay? So, and the inflammatory reaction, the blood vessel, in case somebody asks, and how is that inflammatory reaction maintained? Blood vessels do have, because they, especially arteries, have a very thick wall, so they have to be nourished. So they do have capillaries of their own, so they are called vasovasorum. And they have a microvascular bed, capillaries,
yeah,
to nourish the wall of the artery. But what happens when the artery is damaged like that with this chronic inflammation, they develop neovascularization, and these new capillaries are abnormal, just like in a tumor or in a cancer. So you know, the name of the lesion is called ateroma, just like carcinoma, but obviously this is a different type of lesion.
So one of those normal and one of those abnormal, then, is what you're saying? Or?
Well, no, this is just classification, how you will classify the blood vessel. They are thicker, they're first order, and you have this longitudinal parallel to the artery, and then from there the capillary network, and that's called second order. So it's just anatomical, but this second order capillaries proliferate in the ateroma, and what you get is abnormal, like in a tumor.
Oh,
so I'm saying that because you could perhaps exploit this like, where is he now? He's not here, but David, exploit that leaky capillaries to deliver some type of therapy.
Is the vasovasorum the abnormal stuff, or is that?
The vessel that wasn't here, what?
Is the vasovasorum, is that abnormal?
To have the vasovasorum, this capillary, is normal, but with the inflammation, like with any type of chronic inflammation, you develop additional capillary network, and those in some inflammatory condition are not, but in here they are abnormal, like in a cancer, you know, and that's the comment that I was making.
This is a little bit naive, but
no problem. Yeah.
I don't know much about heart attacks, but I had this idea that, you know, there are fat deposits in the arteries, and eventually the deposits become so big that the artery actually gets closed and blood can't get through. But it seems like you're saying that's not what happens. What
no,
happens
that's
is
not
it gets partially blocked under the clot that blocks
right.
it.
Right. And what I'm saying is that there's not even correlation. There's a correlation, but it's not very good between the extent of how much an artery is clogged and your tendency or your predictive tendency to have a heart attack, okay?
So the coagulation is...
So the precipitating event is the clotting, is something in the coagulation system, just detect the wall as a procoagulant surface, you know, procoagulant facilitate coagulation. And it clots, and that happened in a matter of seconds to minutes, and then we are dead, you know. And many people are dead every year from that. So that is a big problem. So it's not like it's something esoteric or like crumpling papers, which I have nothing against it. This is something that matters to everybody. So, and so we want to understand why this response mount and why in some people it's worse than another, and it's a chronic thing, and there are many time scales involved in this type of process. And so the phenomenon is local. That's something to remember. The heart attack is a local phenomenon. It's in an artery that is narrow and now is blocked. And so in a physiologic environment, at the level of the extravascular or the perivascular tissues, there's a homeostasis. It continually maintained by adjustment to small changes. And when there is a tissue perturbation of whatever type, and we don't know what is it that initiates this malignant deposit of fat, and there will be a threshold perturbation, and that induce a response. And all the responses come down to a change in the rate of reactions. And that's why they are, we want to model, and there's now a big movement that we want to model, even if they're very complex, if we could model these reaction rates, we will find out the rate limiting step and what can we go and make new drugs to control these. This was another, just a comment that the change of this response, that it's not a pathological thing, but this is a way that the organism try to come back to the physiological state. So per se, inflammation and coagulation, that in fact they're part of the same homeostatic system, are not bad, but when they are unbalanced, for some reason they're bad, and you can have thrombophilia, which is a tendency to thrombose, and people with arteriosclerosis have that tendency to form clot, or hemophilia have a tendency to bleed. This is a big problem in hospital because of the treatment. So, and then when it's real bad, you may have the disseminated intravascular coagulation. And there is a, also the same sort of things for inflammation. But both inflammation and coagulation happen at the same time and phylogenetically develop together. So many of the characteristic functional units of these systems are similar. And I will just tell you now and why this is here with the membrane is that most of these reactions are mediated by a complex that is totally membrane dependent, and it depends on negatively charged membrane. And usually you have a cofactor that is have no enzymatic activity, but it's very important to give specificity and also for localization so that this reaction can go on all over the blood because we'll be dead in 1 second. And then there is a vitamin K dependent protein that is where the catalytic site resides, and you all know what that is, but that's and this is inserted into the lipid membrane down into the hydrophobic part, and then the way this reaction works is that the enzyme, for example, like that, circulates as a zymogen that is non-active, and it is locally activated, and it's localized to the place where this cofactor and another enzyme is localized. And then this will convert the zymogen into another active enzyme that in turn will go and bound, insert into the membrane, and together with another cofactor will catalyze the next step. So it's a series of steps that are all very controlled and localized, and the unit is that, the cofactor and the membrane insertion. And the problem in the field is that these R3 proteinases and the prototype enzyme will be trypsin and chemotrypsin, and this is the catalytic enzyme that are best known. And the active side, of course, that's where the chemical, the coating of the protease take place, okay? But that's the similarity between chemotrypsin and these coagulation enzymes and all these other enzymatic pathways that regulate inflammation and even the complement and fibrinolysis. So that the problem is that people, by trying to make analogies with a fluid phase membrane, are missing all the physical aspect of coagulation, which of course I believe are rate determinant and is what really matters. So that the chemical step in coagulation is not so important because it happens so fast. When these things are oriented in the right place, the cleavage of the bond is like, the time that takes is infinitesimal compared with the time that all these take to assemble and to come to the place of the reaction. And okay, so when we want to model those reactions, we need to remember that there is no just this question. coagulation factor and those enzymes, but there are other factors in there, and one is the flow. This is a combination of a flow process, you know, these coagulation factors are circulating, but then assembled in the procoagulant surfaces, and then the quantity and concentration of the factor also could change. So since the 1700s, it's known that the tendency to suffer from cardiovascular disease is not determined just by this, by the concentration or something in the plasma coagulation factor, neither by the surface and not the flow alone, but it's something that involves the three of them. So you want to model this, you have to take into account all these factors. And obviously you can see here that, you know, we need to learn about flow and many other things, you know, not just about chemotrypsin and trypsin, okay, when we study coagulation. And here I will take a little bit more time. This is like a cartoon that deals with the tip of the top vertex of that triangle, the plasma coagulation factors. And so the process of blood coagulation, if you see fibrinogen, this is a protein that is in the blood and is very abundant, okay, maybe in the milligram quantities. And it circulates, of course, it's all in dilution. So the fibrinogen, and this circulates and it's all fluid, but if there is any thrombin, fibrinogen is cleaved, and then some reactive sites are exposed, and you know, from fibrinogen, it's called fibrin, and fibrin form polymer, and the polymer form a clot. And fibrin, of course, the platelets have binding site for fibrin, together with the bone marrow growth factor that somebody was talking about, and they can then stick also at the site of the clot, okay? But because that cannot be happening nilly-willy every time by chance some thrombin appear, this degeneration and the level of thrombin are very highly regulated. And like I said, this is something that happened localized, and the membrane localizes. So let's see how thrombin is formed and maintained. There are two pathways or enzymatic pathway by which thrombin can be formed. Nowadays, we believe that the so-called tissue factor or extrinsic pathway is the most important and the determinant in the cardiovascular disease. And what we believe is happening is that in normal endothelium, it doesn't express tissue factor on the surface of the endothelium. But if the endothelium is either eroded because of the lesion from the inside out, or because the endothelial cells are activated in some way, then tissue factor is expressed in the luminal surface of the blood vessel, and then tissue factor has a very high affinity for one of those proteases, and it binds the factor 7, you know, and these are the way they were discovered, so that's the meaning of these numbers, you know, historically. Fibrinogen is factor 1 because that's the one that it was obvious from the beginning, it's very abundant and so on. So you can correlate the number with how much of it is in the blood. And, okay, so where am I? So then you have a complex of this type, and this enzyme, if it's not bound to this cofactor, it has very little activity. So this is an essential cofactor, but in itself doesn't have activity, but it confers activity to the factor 7. One is in complex on the surface. And so this complex activates another zymogen, which is factor 10, this will be the substrate, and the product will be factor 10A, and this now goes, everything's here in the middle, but everything happened in the surface, it's just that because there is no space, it's listed here, but these are all surface-dependent reactions. So now this factor 10A, together with this factor 5, which is a circulating cofactor that also doesn't have enzymatic activity, but it confers the enzymatic activity to the 10A. I mean, it accelerates the activity. It's not like 10A, you put a lot of it in a test tube. Of course, it's a serine proteinase. That is another membrane-bound complex that can activate prothrombin to thrombin, okay? So that you can get 10A. And I'll tell you now that we believe now that the concentration of factor 10A is what regulates the whole process. And so that factor 10A is very central. So factor 10A can also be generated via the intrinsic pathway, and this is less well known, but it's what is called the contact pathway. And here you have factor 11 that goes to 11A via the factor 12, and then 9 to 9A that together with 8 is the 8 is the cofactor of factor 9A to activate factor 10 to 10A again. So this appears to be a redundant pathway, but in vivo it isn't. It's not, because you know how people that lack either factor nine or factor 8 suffer from hemophilia, and this is you all have heard people with hemophilia A or B. And as it happened, I will just tell you the new things that are coming up, that the mothers of the heterozygous mothers of people with hemophilia suffer no coagulation defect, but they are protected from cardiovascular disease. So that there may be a reason why these being heterozygous and having and they have much lower circulating level of factor A than anybody that is not heterozygous. That is.
Did I understand you say that if you're hemophilic, you have a good chance of not having a heart attack?
That's correct. It's that you bleed, but the mother's heterozygous mother of hemophilia have enough factor 8 or 9 to provide for the coagulation and not bleeding, and that protect them from cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
So it's not absolute, but they
yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the anticoagulant factors that the cardiologists use to have the evidence plays a role.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the intrinsic pathway that is not redundant for that reason, and the proof is that there is people with hemophilia. And we don't know why in vivo it is necessary, where in vitro coagulation of blood happened by tissue factor, very efficient, and you don't need the other factors. Also, the extrinsic pathway can also generate factor 9A from 9 in the same way that generates 10 from 10A, so that it's a very efficient amplification loop, because then 9 with 8 makes more 10A. Okay, so there is an amplification loop in here. This is for people that have a model in mind, so that you can start imagine how to do these things. Okay, so you form these factors by intrinsic, extrinsic pathway, but of course, these reactions are also self-limited, and they are controlled by inhibitory pathways. And inhibitory pathways, there are several. One is they're in blue here, the tissue factor pathway inhibitor. Is an stoichiometric inhibitor. That means it's like goes one-to-one stoichiometry with the tissue factor 7 complex. So when these bind to here, and this can be induced by the endothelial cells, you know, also coinciding with the injury and the timing, we don't know very well. And all these proteins interact with glycosaminoglycans in the glycocalyx. So this inhibit tissue factors stoichiometrically, and the main inhibitor of all the active proteases, this inhibit the complex, but when the proteases are formed, we have the antithrombin pathway that is dependent of glycosaminoglycan, and the glycosaminoglycans are like catalyst of this reaction. This is also stoichiometric. One antithrombin molecule is used for one molecule of 10A that is neutralize, and both of them get out of the system, okay? And there is another similar stoichiometric inhibitor that is less important. It's called heparin cofactor 2, and that uses dermatan sulfate, and this one uses heparin sulfate, and also we find out chondroitin sulfate, okay? And there is also a lot of antithrombin in the blood, and so that it can quench basically more than all the thrombin and all the proteases if they were activated. So there is no danger that you will have it much of these floating around. But under steady state, there is a minimal amount that is always there. Okay. Then there is this pathway that is very important, the protein C pathway, this is a dynamic pathway. The protein C is one of those complexes of the generation of protein C that is also a vitamin K dependent protein, depends on one of these complexes. And the enzyme in that complex, it happened to be thrombin, so you say there's a regulatory loop. And in addition, when you had the fibrin clot, there is the fibrin leak pathway, and continuously also keep the blood free from fibrin clot. And then also when you, under physiologic condition, you have a little cut and then heal, the deposition of fibrin is also the step one in remodeling and healing. So these pathways are connected with all the other local pathways that are involved in morphogenesis and wound healing and remodeling. And this also, this is an enzyme and the that is derived from the non-enzymatic precursor, a zymogen, this plasminogen, and tissue plasminogen activator is the enzyme, and so on. So this motif of having a membrane associated complex, it repeats, and that's how this reaction are both cell limited and localized, which is very important. So let's see what I have next. So so the problem is to understand all this complex set or reaction, and we know a lot about how many of the components, the concentration in plasma, and we have rate coefficients, but they are, and that's the big problem, is rate coefficients have been taken from situations that are not relevant to the in vivo situation. So the goal now is to get coefficients that are relevant to the biological situation, okay? But in here, that's a problem. We want to get better anticoagulants, okay? And we have, now you look in a pharmacopoeia and then you have like hundreds of drugs that are called anticoagulant, but in reality, there are just very few type of drugs that we have to control the coagulation system. And heparin, that is a glycosaminoglycan, then warfarin, that is a vitamin K antagonist, and it's rat poison, okay? And so the reason why this is, and it's a very good drug, but all this drug, except from antiplatelets, and the example is aspirin, and all these drugs had a very narrow therapeutic window, and what that means is that if you get too little, you get nothing, but very soon you can get too much and you have a very bad effect. You know, you make the people bleed. And the thymogens and the proteases in the coagulation cascades are vitamin K dependent protein. And what that means is that they have a post-translational modification that one glutamic acid is carboxylated, okay? And so they have very negative charges in the what is called the gamma carboxylated domain. So that gives this protein the ability to dip into the membrane, like we will see, or to localize to the membrane. And only coagulation proteins, and very few other, maybe only 12 or 15 protein of all the, you know, 30,000 protein that we have are actually vitamin K dependent proteins. So, and there is a very specialized mechanism to carboxylate them that depend, it's an enzyme in the endoplasmic reticulum that is the gamma carboxylates. And the cofactor of that enzyme is vitamin K, okay? So vitamin K antagonists also, you know, bacteria in your gut also generate vitamin K. And so they are difficult to regulate for that. Then antiplatelets, there are many drug under development based on how the platelets bind to the endothelial cell and so on, and those are not very successful, very dangerous drugs. There's also direct inhibitors of the active proteases, and those are not working either. So there's really a need in here, and if we want to get that line, you know, decreasing mortality for heart disease, it's really, we have to get better new anticoagulants. Recently, maybe in the past 10 years or so, these statins, which is totally different drug, is the only new things that have happened in the past half century. They reduce the intrinsic synthesis of cholesterol, so they decrease the total load of esterol, and they want to put everybody on statin to reduce the cholesterol deposits in the arteries, but they are not without problem. But in addition, now they have very extensive studies in which they have tried these drugs, and under, you know, in these clinical studies, the patients are really well controlled, and so that they have the best surgeons and the best cardiologists, and then they have the best hospital, and still 2/3 of the cardiovascular event remain. So it looks that we already exhausted our ability to get a line down in the mortality. So we need new, yes.
Yeah, I don't understand how you know it's 2/3 event rate, because you have somebody who is under the statins.
Yeah.
You compare to what?
You compare it exactly with the same population that is not on the statin. Okay? And you reduce, you compare those to population, 1/3, you know, one-fourth or whatever, yeah, 1/3 less, but still, you know, and we don't know why, and this is, you know, they say, are we not giving enough of the statin, or is you know, and if you give a lot of statin, you begin to have problems, and so they also are finding out that, you know, maybe have gone as much, you probably are statin.
The cholesterol is going down or not?
The what?
The cholesterol.
Yeah, the cholesterol keep going down, but you need to add more to get a smaller effect. You know, you're forcing the dose of statin just to get a smaller increase. And even the correlation with lower level of cholesterol and less heart disease start breaking down too. You know, it's harder and harder to decrease the cholesterol, you know. So that's the problem, is think about, we need to know all these reactions just to make better that. This, I think I'm gonna pass by, but it's just that the problem, the clot even thickened because the coagulation and inflammation are related at many points of anything that you do. For example, you see the tissue factor in here, it combine endothelial cell receptor and activate pro-inflammatory cytokine, and so on. There are many points in which there are connection. And so when you think about a drug that maybe it's gonna block this, we're gonna block many other things. So some way to model this in a way, it's necessary. This is the place where inflammatory reaction, I'll pass this too. Again, it was to show different places where all these pathways are connected. But this is a capillary bed, and this is a cast of the capillaries, and this is like micron, you know, thick, and there will be maybe like 100 micron difference in here, a few cells only. And here's what all the, when there is a vasodilation, everything's spewed out of here, and this is the site of the inflammatory reaction. But this type of structure can be modeled. So that was the point of this, okay? And I had tried, you know, like. Okay, so then more detail about where this coagulation reaction take place. And until very recently, we could not image the glycocalyx. This is, again, like a capillary, you know, and from the microcirculation. And as you can see, the whole endothelial cells is like a very thin layer, and the membrane even thinner. And then there are the glycosaminoglycan change that in here you see as hair. You see it as hair because they're using a dye that is called Alcyon Blue, which is very positively charged, and all these glycosaminoglycan change are negatively charged. So you see more stain when there is more charge, but in between, of course, this is very hydrated. So that in reality, what you have is a mucous layer covering all the microvasculature. And here is closer. And you see that compared with this membrane where this thing has happened, this is very, very large. And also that it, as you go down, it gets thicker. And in here too, that the, during the preparation of the tissue, it gets removed. There's an infinity of plasma protein that get absorbed into this layer, and that form like a reservoir of plasma that we don't know very much about. So modeling these glycocalyx as a reservoir of plasma protein and a regulator of wherever it goes into the membrane, that's another thing that is needed. And this is a closer look because it's even more complicated in the sense that the endothelial cells regulate when and how it has and how much glycocalyx. So it can sort of shed this thing, comes and goes, yeah.
Maria, can you go back to the
cells in here, there will be other cells and interstitial space.
Oh, okay.
So the endothelial cell is very thin. Maybe, you know, I don't know,
okay.
If this is 0.2 micron, maybe it will be
so
1 micron,
okay.
You know, maybe
okay.
Maybe all this is the endothelial cells.
Okay.
But compared to the membrane, this will be maybe, you know, 50 to 100 times longer. And maybe in vivo, when the whole thing is assembled in there, maybe even larger. And they can do estimates of the whole volume in the of the glycocalyx in the body, and it's a lot, you know. So that 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 you can have.
Hey,
John. This is the same, which is a different way so, that, that appear, you know.
So
it's
the single photos are they bundled by...
Oh, okay, that,
the
that's
yeah,
there
by
is
by
a structure to that.
It's very sparse.
Yeah, no, in reality it will be all hydrated and with a lot of other protein intercalated that they go away when you use this very charged, very highly charged positively.
Okay.
Yeah, but for example, you have very long hyaluronic acid, okay, and then there will be proteoglycan, you know, hook with in a region that is called a link protein, and it's non-covalent, but maybe 4 micro, nanometer, you know, that's the KD. And then these proteoglycans will have the glycosaminoglycans in here, okay? And this will be, you know, the very highly negatively charged. And anyway, why, you know, we don't know very much of the actual structure, and so that's one thing they have to figure out. But the other thing is that the endothelial cell can shed chunks of it when it reaches, and we just don't know how and why. But and these people have done, they're doing great. That's very much.
But it's a brush, and it's not a network.
It is a network. That's unfortunately because the proteins are gone. It's not covalently linked network, but there's proteins all over here, and they could be. Well, okay, here is more like a brush. In here more like a brush, but in the connective tissue, you have the same, but there will be two cells, and you don't see it so well as a brush. It has a collagen network, collagen and fibrin network. In here, we don't know, but don't think that it's just a brush, I don't think, because we have removed a lot of stuff from there.
I mean, but that's one of the things, I mean, irrespective of all the details of what the proteins are, but the question of whether it's a brush or a network is enormously important for all the mechanical properties of this thing. So that's, I think, is...
And my idea is that you can model it as a brush, and then model as a something else, and you get a in-between picture, you see. That's the thing, because we don't know very much now, so a brush may be okay, because some of these, like, those, I mean, like, they look like a brush, but for many years we didn't see anything, and people didn't think that the endothelial cell have a glycocalyx. So now at least we know that there's something there, and there is the, and this is very heterogeneous. Okay.
Does,
yes.
Does that layer change with age or?
With age, I don't know, but it changed from minute to minute and from second to second. For example, these people are doing a lot of nice work now, and this is something that's coming, you know. they inject, for example, a load of glucose in the blood, and then they measure the hyaluronic acid in the blood, and there is a shed, a massive shed, just from a high glucose level. So they
the shed,
you know, they this thing come off somehow.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how they do it, but it comes in the blood, okay, and then it's made up. They make it again, very, you know. So the regulation of that, we don't know very little. We know that it's there. Maybe when the coagulation in arteriosclerosis, that changes, and that's why it facilitates the coagulation. But it's very heterogeneous, okay? So you find a way to see how proteins percolate to go to the membrane in here. You see, you could have either very dense or big holes. And also, if you look from the top of an endothelial cell, it's chemically heterogeneous. Some people have looked at it within a micrometer square, you can have different pH. So that the glycocalyx has the possibility of selecting to different places, different molecules on the basis of charge and also on the basis of other characteristics, size, for example. And then just very quickly, an experiment that these guys did to you know, in here you can see the some of the glycosaminoglycans in the extravascular spaces, okay? You don't see as much as in here because that dye doesn't penetrate so much, and these are in vivo experiment. So what they did is they stained that in vivo, and then they treat this with hyaluronidase, also in vivo. Hyaluronidase is very specific. It only removes the glycosaminoglycans, but it does nothing to the structural protein. And what they saw is that, of course, all the glycocalyx and the glycosaminoglycans are gone, but now in here, the water is dysregulated, okay? And there's edema, and the regulation of local regulation of water is messed up. Yeah, and this is a repeat in vivo of an experiment that Mayer did many years back in the 70s, showing that you take a chunk of tissue and remove the glycosaminoglycan, it will not imbibe, it will not swell like would do if it has the glycosaminoglycan.
What was changed between the last one and this one?
This, in here, this is much larger space, and they quantitate this.
They
remove the glycosaminoglycans.
How did they remove?
With hyaluronidase, it's a specific enzyme that only removes, it doesn't touch collagen or the mesh work. And in here, there is a mesh work, a mesh work of collagen and elastin and many other proteins. But if you remove specifically hyaluronic acid, then that network cannot control the water, and the water just log in there, which is not good because then the oxygen diffusion and everything else is messed up. And that's how you look close as would be the membrane. Here's the one that is treated, and here's the one that is not treated. And here, there are all the proteins that are, you know, the core protein, because proteoglycans and other protein, you just see like clumps in there. And so what's the problem now? When biologists look at this reaction and everything, they do this. This is not mine. In fact, I put this as a very bad example of what not to do. So, to conceptualize the reaction that take place during the activation of the coagulation of blood, they use this type of cartoons, which are totally out of proportion, which they only have single molecules, okay? And it just, so they never think in terms of the physics that are involved in the blood coagulation, but only, you know, in a very qualitative type of way. So, but I think that what we need to, if we want to model this reaction completely, is if we want to know how many, how long, how fast, and where's the rate control mechanism.
Is it clear that there's such a thing as a rate controlling mechanism?
There may be more than one, but obviously they're not going on at the same rate.
Point is, having such a complicated network means that all these things control themselves, so there's not a single thing determining it, which is actually good, because
I agree. But in here, rate controlling, I mean to find out the velocity of each one of those reactions and see what it is. Because the ones that are slower are the ones that you can then therapeutically influence better. Okay? If this, the cleavage of this protease in here goes like, I don't know, 100,000 per second, but this molecule, it takes, you know, you don't see only, you know, 10 per second, you know, an exaggeration. That obviously you can inhibit this what you want, you know, it's going to take, you're going to have to block all the molecules that have that to see an effect in the rate. And that's exactly what is happening with this active site inhibitor. They don't do anything if you only block a fraction of the molecule because the system is going full blast with just a few of them because that's not the rate limiting step. But you could block or find some way to regulate how the transfer of the substrate goes, which is probably a diffusion process, then you'd be a lot more able to control or to, you don't need to inhibit coagulation, we know how to do it. Accelerate coagulation, we know how to do it. We just want to be able to control it in a safe way, so this is more subtle than just inhibited. And this is, you know, just to, again, leave us thinking point that because there's not just one molecule, there are a bunch of molecules at the same time. If you don't decide which one is the rate limiting, you don't know what you're doing. And so this, all this you know, but there are two key questions which are still not resolved. They are resolved in my mind and in my experiment, but in the field, in the people that now very aggressively want to model this system, they still go from a totally chemical approach. So, you know, that's one thing that would be nice to really very clearly and very emphatically show that the diffusion and flow matters. And this is the argument, of course, I don't have to go here and explain to you that this is just simply summarize the prototypical reaction that this decomposed to product irreversibly, you know, because these are hydrolytic reactions, you cannot put them back together. So this step in here is not reversible. The other is, so you will get an effective coefficient. And when this forward reaction, like I was saying, is a lot faster than that the dissociation of the complex, then the entire reaction rate is dependent of the rate at which the two molecules come together, or the reactant come together. I summarize this just to two, but they could actually, there are usually three. Now, the other thing that this complex is membrane and calcium dependent. Okay, so the other thing, and I'll try to go very fast, this is like a cartoon of the structure of coagulation factor. There's a serine proteinase domain, exactly the same as chemotrypsin and trypsin, but then there is this area that we don't pay that much attention, but there are structures that have growth factor-like domain, and this you predict that will interact with the glycocalyst a lot. And then there is the gamma-carboxylated domain that this the machinery of which this is localized to the lipid bilayer, and it has a structure that, and Gillian, the person that was talking before, we did this work together, there's this calcium binding motif, and this end of the protein has some sort of an arrow shape, and this motifs repeat on either side of this the arrowhead, and in here the surface of the molecule, the hydrophilic in blue, and the hydrophobic in brown, is the tip that goes into the membrane, and this is about 5 to 8 nanometers, so that the negatively phosphatidyl serine head will interact with some of this calcium, which the coordination of this calcium is not totally full, and the motif will repeat on the other side, so it gives some flexibility in how it gets there. And just this is, I put very quickly, I wasn't going to show any experiment, but it's very curious that using Gauss-Chapman, I don't even know how to pronounce, classical electrostatic theory, even in this complex system, you can have find that for the extrinsic and intrinsic protease, it fits the theory exactly. And so sometimes I say that you all are very hard on yourself, and the simple model sometimes can be used for a very complex model. And you know, and you can even derive some effective charges. Obviously, they don't correspond to the actual independent charges, but this model simply assumes that the reactants are charges, and still you can get the data, you know, all that complex molecule and everything. This is a negative charge and that is a positive charge, and still it fits perfectly well. And how to do this? There are an immensity of treatment of people that have tried to do that. Your people, you know, physicists and mathematicians. This is just a fraction of the thing. These are things that in red is where I would like to work with somebody, you know, more things. But what we really need is to, what they've done, now bring it a little bit further to what I do, which is the real reaction in real people. And this I'm going to pass because I got tired when I was making the slides, and I'm sure that you're tired too listening. You know, that's a way that I gear how long I need to talk. But this is the last point that I want to make. And it's not that you shouldn't do original research, because of course we all know that, but it's this thing from my favorite philosopher, this is in Latin, was translated, but this English translator, which is he's English and he's an English scholar, but knows Latin very well, and he's very good in translating from Latin to English, but he's not so good in translating from English to Latin, even if he knows both of them very well. So that's the same thing between me and you. I'm not very good in translating medicine to man, but I'll be better in translating math to the medical people. And you, some of you had to do the same thing, you know, so it takes an effort from both sides. And so that's the whole idea, the final thought. So thank you.